Mr. Delgado, and then we'll hear from Mr. Hickson. And Judge Southwick is here with us on the monitor and is fully participating today. Thank you. You may proceed, sir. Can you start his clock over, please?
Please the court, counsel, Mr. Hickson. Your honors, this case involves a shooting by the Houston Police Department on July 14, 2021, in the evening about 7:30 p.m. under a bridge, it's called on IH-10 and Monroe in the city of Houston, where they have pillars and sometimes the road goes through. Mr. Salinas relates that he was on the telephone at the time with an individual called Jason Dela Cruz, and we have submitted in our second amended and in our replies to motion dismiss his affidavit, including another affidavit, which I'll get to later. From the affidavit, he tells Mr. Jason Dela Cruz that the lights are behind me, police. I don't know what I did. Maybe I ran a red light, I don't know. Now, there's not very much room under this bridge. I mean, it could be 100 feet, maybe, 100 yards, maybe 150, where they just go under the bridge, okay? And we have cars going over and the acoustics are not good. Well, all of a sudden, Mr. Jason hears a bang and then he hears shouting. What happened was Mr. Salinas, David Salinas, crashed in one of those pillars. We have in our exhibits that this was not just a fender bender. I mean, the front of the car was gone. Airbag came out. So the officers in about 20 to 30 seconds arrived there. Instead of saying, let's go look at him and see if he's all right. It was a pretty good hit. Airbags are out. He is now in the passenger seat and fumbling. Instead, one of the officers, Salazar, told him, pin the car, because the other side was on the pillar. So they pinned him in the car. At that moment, we submit, he was seized. Now, why did they stop him? As of today, either in the defendant appellate's pleadings in the lower court or in their appeal brief, have not stated the reason. We still don't know. Why did they stop him? Why were they after him? We still don't know. So then, at that moment, we submit that he was seized and the Fourth Amendment kicks in, unreasonable search and seizure. Graham versus Connor tells us that we have to look at the totality of the circumstances, and it has to be a objective, reasonable standard. In reviewing this, we see that they're shouting commands to see his hands, and in immediately he does this, does that, he's looking for something, up and down. He's on the passenger side, you're not on the driver's side.
One of your complaints said that there was a gun, but then another one didn't. Was there a gun?
My understanding at the time, we did not know that, but it seems like there was a gun recovered.
Okay.
Okay.
And we've had access to watch the videos as we're supposed to under Scott v. Harris. And is it your position that your client was not able to comply with the officer's request to show his hands?
Well, if we see the memo from Judge Yoitz, the lower court decision on the memo, and he states in there that he was disoriented and did not wield a gun, obviously disoriented from the accident. He even admits that, even though he ruled against us, he states that in his memo. So not only are we alleging that he was disoriented because of the accident, but we also, the court is agreeing with us at that time.
So what is your position of why this was, I mean, this is very unfortunate, obviously, the shooting of your client, but what is your position that it was excessive force, given that there were clear commands to which, and they were practically begging him to comply, and the compliance was sporadic and then non-existent, and then there is the lunging for the back seat, reaching in, and then that seems to be the pivotal moment.
Excuse me, Judge, the back seat?
Or he's reaching towards the back. Yeah. He's not just reaching to the side down.
No,
he's reaching fully back around to the back.
Correct.
Yeah, at that last time.
If we look
so
at
that. So what is your position? What case and what is your legal position and factual position about why that would be excessive force?
Because they never lost. One of the officers was Judge, Officer Garcia, was on the windshield banging with his gun, mm-hmm. telling him, stop reaching.
Yes.
Hanging on the windshield. So where is the fear? He's there, right there, seeing everything. He doesn't shoot. Salazar opens up, and then he pulls back and shoots. He's the one that opened up. So, one, there was no fear or any circumstances that he could hurt someone. He's obviously disoriented. He's not know where he's at.
There's no circumstances on which he could hurt someone?
He's pinned in the car. And the officers have the gun on him. The officer Garcia has the gun. He's like 2 feet away, banging on him.
I'm thinking he's reaching for something.
On the affidavit, Your Honor, if I may, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Jason De La Cruz in his affidavit says, and he's muttering, and he's saying, don't shoot, don't shoot. I'm looking for my phone. Now, we have all these cars coming over. I don't think they heard him, and I don't think he heard the officers hollering, because he probably raised his hands up because he saw guns at him.
If they couldn't hear him, then how could that be excessive force?
Because they should have checked first to see if he was injured. Instead, they pin him. I mean, where is the procedure? If a person gets involved in an accident, you come out there and you pin him and you pull guns on him without any probable cause?
Police chase.
Yes, ma'am.
And they have somebody that they perceive to be dangerous because they've just been in a police chase. And so they don't know what they're going to have face when they get there.
Well,
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to figure out what case do you have that would support your argument that that the district court erred?
It would be Graham versus Connor. He didn't see the totality of the circumstances and the subjective reasonable, the objective reasonable standard. But Judge, there's never a chase here. That's the main thing. The appellees keep saying a fleeing. Within 30 seconds, they're on the car. Where's the chase? To be a chase, he would have to go somewhere under the bridge and somewhere else. There was no chase. He crashed. Now, when you get the lights put on you, logically, you don't just stop the car. You look for a place to get out of the way because now the lights are on you. And I submit to you, that's when he crashed. There was no chase. They're saying he fleed. In the dispatch report, the officer says he's not stopping. That doesn't mean he's a chase. Texas Transportation Code 101 says he has to willfully want to not be caught or evade, and the officers have to have a car that's marked. They have to have some type of a siren, or they can use their hands, or they can use lights. But people don't. When you get the lights put on you, you don't stop immediately. You look for a place to kind of get out of the way. I mean, and they say he didn't stop. They never said he's fleeing. They never said, hey, we're on a chase. There was no chase, Your Honor, respectfully.
Okay.
May I continue?
You have any other argument you want to make?
Well, I wanted to go show that the situation here was that Salazar, who was seeing him right in front of him, he never shoots. He pulls back. His partner that's away is the one that opened up. And I submit to you that he was just, I don't know why he did it, but he opened up. And he even tells him before, watch the crossfire. In his mind, he was already going to shoot. He had it in his mind. But Garcia is right there in front of him, seeing everything. Now, if you look at the critical incident report, we also submitted a slow motion video, and it shows that at the time that they're shooting him, both of them, you see this, and you see his hands. And we have an affidavit from the people at the funeral that said they saw holes in his hands. So much for the critical incident report that said he failed to follow commands. He put his hands up and he got shot.
Are you bringing claims under the Texas Wrongful Death Act or the Texas Survival Statutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not clear from how the facts in your complaint are pleaded. Can you help us with that?
Well, in Texas law, it can either be the widow or the wife. It can come with a wrongful death or the estate. We have filed a petition saying Brittany Salinas individually and as executor of the estate. Now, the estate is filed and it's pending. Pending meaning it's not terminated yet because this case is pending. And the court, I think, in its memo of November the 30th said that they felt exactly what I said, that they can go either way. They can go either with the wife as individually or they can go with the estate. We went both ways and we have an estate. Your Honor, we'd like to for the court to consider the case of Aguirre versus the City of San Antonio. And that case was here from the Fifth Circuit. They said if an individual is not resisting, he is not in any criminal activity, there can be no qualified immunity. That's what that case said. He's not resisting. He's pinned in the car. Where's the criminal activity? Where's the PC? We haven't seen it. Why did they stop him? We don't know. As of today, it seems like it's a secret. But they haven't expounded that in their pleadings. You think they would. It would be beneficial, but there is none because I believe there wasn't any. They just wanted to stop it. For what other reason, I don't know. There was a sting operation there, and he was at the wrong place at the wrong time. Driving through a sting operation is not against the law because you don't know it's a sting operation. But for some reason, they called these officers with a gang unit to come down there and check him out. But nobody has said, where's the probable cause? What did he do? Where was the criminal activity? Yet they come out after him like he just committed or robbed a bank with guns drawn, hollering commands. It doesn't make logical sense. Now, in the first memo, the judge says that in the first motions to dismiss, there was a Fourth Amendment violation, and he stated that it was viable, and he didn't dismiss it, and he said there'd probably be a favorable verdict. Okay, we amend accordingly to the judge in the lower court. He took out the First Amendment, 14th, and the 8th, and left the 4th. So we amend our complaint. They file another motion to dismiss, and the judge makes a complete reverse and says it was split second. Well, there's cases on that. There's the Tamil, there's the Tolan versus Cotton, where they say the quickness of it is something to consider in the totality of the circumstances. They didn't wait enough time. What would have prevented them from getting some backup and calling? Why did they have to kill him? So you don't follow your commands that quick and they kill you?
Are these rhetorical questions? Or you, what?
Those are statements that I'm making about the facts, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I think the two partners are trying to, I think they're going to tell us that they're trying to keep them from getting shot or harmed.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but in the memo, the second memo of lower court, and I quote the judge, he said, injured and disoriented from the crash, struggling, Salinas struggled to stabilize himself. He apparently raised and lowered his hand intermittently and only partially complied with the officer's orders.
Do you disagree with that?
I'm
actually
finished.
Did he raise his hands intermittently?
Yes, he did.
And lower his hands intermittently.
And we submit
that kind of turn to the side towards
yes,
the back
he was
at the critical moment.
The court is saying that he was disoriented, obviously.
That wasn't the question about whether he's disoriented. Do you disagree that he intermittently complied and then didn't comply and then turned?
That's in the critical incident report. Yes.
So you agree that's what happened?
Yes.
Okay.
But the court said that he only partially complied and we became to reach for something. Salazar, hey, 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 he's reaching. They fired rounds. At no point did the officers see Salinas wield a gun. Instead, they saw this when they're shooting him. If you look at that picture of a slow motion video, you'll see his hands. And we have it confirmed from the funeral, the people were there with affidavits that said he had holes in his hands. He was complying. What would have prevented them from waiting to see or pulling the car back and pulling him out? Why did they have to pull the guns like he just committed and robbed a bank? It just, that's a felony arrest. That is not a stop where you have, for whatever reason, that has not been stated, the probable cause.
Judge Southwick, did you have any questions for Mr. Delgado? His time has expired, but I didn't ask you if you had any questions. I'm sorry.
Well, I will speak up if I have any. I don't have any yet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You've saved time for rebuttal, sir. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Higginson.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Higginson. I represent the City of Houston and Officers Garcia and Salazar.
Can you maybe put the microphone closer to you so you can be heard better?
My apologies. Does that seem about right?
That's good.
Okay, I represent the City of Houston and Officers Salazar and Garcia. I'd like to first respond to this line of Q&A about, excuse me, please, I had two pairs of glasses and neither one works. This Q&A about how long the officer should have waited to fire. I've cited Manis v. Lawson in our brief, and I think that's probably the best case that I have cited, but there's another one that you probably are familiar with, and this may catch Mr. Delgado off guard because I did not cite it in my brief. I want to give
you. Did you know you were going to cite it today?
No. And
you just now thought of it?
Just after I got here. But
did you tell him?
No. But I'll skip it. I'll be happy to.
You can cite it, but Mr. Delgado will have an opportunity to file a 28J addressing the case that you're now going to cite within 3 business days. Go ahead.
Yes, and I think that's exactly the right way to do it, of course. I'm not trying to get past anything. It's just that it comes right into play here with the best language imaginable, and that is Salazar Limon versus the City of Houston and Officer Chris Thompson. And that's at 826 Fed 3rd, 272. It's this court from 2016. And particularly look at page 279, note 6. And I'll read a quote from that note, which I just wrote down as I was sitting here. We have never required officers to wait until a defendant turns towards them with weapon in hand before applying deadly force to ensure their safety. From that, it cites Manis v. Lawson, which I did cite in my brief. The two best briefs that I have, excuse me, two best cases that I have would be Manis v. Lawson, which I cited, and Scott v. Harris, which has to do with the pursuit. In Manis v. Lawson, which you probably are very familiar with, that involved a fatal officer-involved shooting that did not start out with them seeing him as a suspect. In fact, they were going to do something that is vaguely akin to a welfare check. There was a car parked on a railroad track, idling on a railroad track with someone in it in the middle of the night, around 3 a.m., I believe it was. And officers go to check on this person, and he was asleep. They bang on the window and the door to awaken him. They awaken him. He also was very disoriented and trying to figure out what was going on. And he's reaching under his seat. They kept telling him to stop reaching, stop reaching, stop reaching several times. And when he wouldn't stop after several times to stop reaching, show us your hands, they fired multiple times. And they fired and it was fatal. As you said, Judge Elrod, every one of these times when an officer uses deadly force is a tragedy. It's terrible. It doesn't mean that it is something for which the officer is subject to suit for which the officer is liable, for which the officer is to blame in any way. And in terms of what we're talking about in terms of qualified immunity, he doesn't even go to suit unless the plaintiff meets this high burden of overcoming their entitlement to qualified immunity. In this case, and yes, as you said, it's very unfortunate. Yes, it's a terrible thing, but that doesn't mean that the officer should have done anything different in that situation. And this is a little bit of commentary. I won't extend it too far. But every time there is a fatal shooting like this, it ends one life and it changes several others, including the officers. And those are people who we rarely acknowledge as being changed by this because it seems so inappropriate. But it's a fact. They don't go out looking for somebody to shoot. They don't go out looking for somebody to pull over and say, hey, let's get some, target practice. It's just not what it is.
Can you remind us why he was being pulled over?
Sure. In fact, I'll use the plaintiff's admissions for this. He was the subject of a prostitution sting by the Vice Squad. Plaintiffs admit this, ROA 411. I cited this in my brief, pages 12 through 14. Several things that plaintiffs admit in their pleadings, that the defendant officers were in pursuit of Mr. Salinas, ROA pages 412 through 15. Plaintiffs admit that Mr. Salinas failed to pull over and the chase, quotes, chase ensued, ROA 405, 412, all these obviously are on my brief, 12 through my brief, pages 412 through 14 in my brief. But it's ROA 405, 412, 419, 429.
Is that anything from the officer's report or anything?
Yes, the HPD critical incident report I also cited there, and that's at ROA 111 and the notice of conventional filing. I give you the paragraphs there. And plaintiffs also admit that the pursuit resulted from these defendant officers' involvement in a sting operation with vice officers, and that's at ROA 411. Plaintiffs admit that
ongoing criminal act, and then they were trying to pull him over as a result of that. Is that what you're understanding, or was it they were just picking him up because they got some information as part of some kind of
It was a sting, and I don't know the exact sequence of the kind of the minute steps. I know the bigger picture that it was a sting. They were after him, and they tried to pull him over, and he fled. Let me see. Okay, they admit, that he failed to pull over, and that's when the chase ended. Officers don't initiate pursuits. Suspects do. When an officer tries to pull over someone, even if it's for a simple traffic stop and the suspect drives off, the flight, just like running away on a street, is a sign of a guilty mind or can reasonably be interpreted as such. And so then the officer has objectively reasonable, it's objectively reasonable for the officer to think, well, there could be something else going on here. I'm at least going to pull him over and see what he has to say about this if he just rolled through that stop sign back there. If a guy rolls through a stop sign, cop tries to pull him over, and the guy drives off down the road, there might be something more wrong than just breaking a traffic law. Maybe, who knows, maybe it's, maybe he's a drug smuggler. We don't know. I mean, there's no reason to think that. But you want to know what it is. So you go after them. But it's the ending of the chase is under the control of the fleeing suspect. The suspect could stop it before it begins. The suspect could stop it along the way. And as the Supreme Court has guided us in Scott v. Harris, the police should not just stop and just let them go, let them get away. And as you've made a reference to Scott v. Harris, you're very familiar with what it says in there about how there are reasons to continue a pursuit once you have someone fleeing from you. You can't let them know you really let it go. You can't let them know it stopped. They might be dangerous as they continue to try to get down the road and hurt someone else. And so these pursuits.
Mr. Hickerson, can you hear me? This is the TV monitor talking to you. Two questions. District Court indicated it would not consider any of the video. Is there actually any problem with it being attached to the complaint in this court on appeal, considering the video in our analysis?
None at all, Your Honor. The court
okay,
should...
Second question, that's fine. Second question, the court decided this on the basis of qualified immunity. At my hearing your argument, it is that the individual officers did not violate the deceased's constitutional rights. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's not just a matter of an absence of clearly established law. It was no violation of constitutional rights. Is that your position?
That's what my understanding of what the judge decided. You could even flip it the other way and say, I remember him specifically writing in that there's no clearly established law. I think he may have decided it primarily on that. But this court could also look at these facts and de novo say there's no violation of rights here. But if you're asking specifically what did Judge Hoyt do?
Well, I'm asking, qualified immunity used to be two steps, and somehow it's become one, which is the absence of clearly established law. But the first step could still be, has there been a violation of a constitutional right, which is a legal question for us to analyze.
Sure.
And I'm hearing you say there wasn't. And if there wasn't, then you don't get to qualified immunity is all I'm asking. I'm not saying that's where I am, but I'm asking where you are on this question.
Oh, where I am. Your Honor, there was no violation of constitutionally protected rights here because the Constitution does not protect somebody fleeing from the police and then doing this with his hands and reaching after they tell him, stop, show me your hands, show me your hands. The visibility of empty hands is critical to the safety of the officers and of the person that they are apprehending. Anything, closed hands even, in sight, even closed hands could conceal a weapon. You can find this in the FBI's list of unusual weapons. This is, if you just consider this, so they've got to be empty and they've got to be open and obvious and stationary, or just following what the officers say, stop reaching. So they go up and down, they go up and down, they go around to the back. It can come back with a gun in a split second. They can fire before the officers can react because action always beats reaction. So that's a long-winded way of saying it's not a constitutional violation because the Constitution doesn't protect you to do what he did here.
So neither prongs one nor prong or two have been satisfied is your position?
Yes, that's correct.
Your friend on the other side wanted us to consider some slow motion videos. As Judge Southwick pointed out, the district court here believed he wasn't even supposed to watch the dash cam video. Are we supposed to watch the slow motion videos and have that influence us here and the dash cam? If we're watching some videos, we should watch all the videos, or procedurally postured, we can watch one or not the other under the law. What say you?
Okay. You can watch the... Actually, you can watch any video that's in the record, anything. If you're watching slow motion videos, you need to be aware that things are going to look very, very different from the way it did to the officers. In fact, even body cam in regular speed might not show everything the officers were seeing. I mean, this is good CLE material, Judge. I mean, you know, what's the difference here between what the camera shows us and what the officers perceived? There's a whole lot of material there on that. But right here, for your question, if you're talking about slowing it down, well, let's slow this down. This guy is reaching back here, but look how slowly he's going. Surely the officers have time to do something to intervene here. A slow motion video is going to be very distorted. A live time speed video will be incomplete, because officers can see around this way and the camera's pointing this way, but it won't be distorted in that sense. It won't be distorted in time. Time is key here. This whole thing lasted 38 seconds from the time they got out of the car. And they keep telling him, they gave him commands that would have saved his life. That's what they want to do. They wanted to arrest him, maybe. They didn't want to kill him.
Is it relevant or important in the analysis that they did didn't immediately go and try to render medical aid, and whether or not he was somewhat disoriented from the crash. Is any of that relevant in this analysis, and how does that fit in?
It's not material to your decision. That is, when the officers are there, they've got somebody who is reasonably perceived to have been a threat a moment earlier, and they've shot him. Even if it was 12 times or fired 12 shots or whatever it was, they don't know that this person is no longer, this might sound outrageous, but please just listen to this. They don't know he's not a threat until they check certain things to check that, you know, is he still able to reach a gun? And this happens. And so they need to take care of a few other things first, and then they get to the medical care. So that has nothing to do with deciding their qualified immunity.
What if he was not able to comply because he was disoriented?
That would be relevant? Not to the qualified immunity analysis. It's definitely not. It could be relevant to his defense in a criminal proceeding. You know, I couldn't do this and all these problems that I have. That's maybe why he acted the way he did. But that doesn't mean the officers were not legally allowed to act the way they did. They can't tell what's going on in here. They can't tell what his abilities are. They see, here's a guy who we have a reason to believe is a felon, and he's fleeing, and we don't know what the deal is. Maybe he's got a criminal past. Maybe he's one of the, somebody else might say, in an encounter with a cop, we've had these, I'm not going back to jail. Now, there's no crime going on right there with those words, but then the guy says, I'm not going back to jail, and charges at the cop. That puts it in a different light. So what they know about Mr. Salinas here gives them enough information to be concerned that he has a weapon. And so until they know that that either doesn't have a weapon and can't do anything to harm them without a weapon, an official weapon, they don't need to tend to his medical needs. After that, yes. But there is no 14th Amendment claim, so that's out of the picture.
Do you have anything else?
I think that, not really. Just, I think that this court should affirm on the same basis that district court judge did. I'll let you have the time back.
We have your argument. Thank you. Mr. Delgado, you saved time for rebuttal.
Please, court. The case of Trammell versus Fugue was reversed on the same principle that the quickness of the force used sometimes mitigates the response. For example, in this particular case, and I keep hearing about a chase. Now, if they're seeing the video where they're going to the place of where they're called to, that's not the chase. Texas Transportation Code says, point 101 says you gotta have the lights on. And you have to be in a marked vehicle in a police officer uniform. When they turn Monroe is when they say, there he is, flip the lights. And in a matter of seconds, he crashes. Where's the chase? I don't see a chase. If anything, he's disabled. Now, he didn't fail to pull over. He just didn't stop right away. And then he crashes. There's a big difference between fleeing and chase and all this that I've been hearing, but I didn't see that. Now, the court put one section out there, a very good question. What would have prevented them from, instead of pinning him in, one officer could have put the gun on him, and the other one said, do you need medical assistance? Can you get out of the car? Or get out of the car and pull him out. They didn't have to kill him. And this happened in a span of 58 seconds, if you see that video. 58 seconds, they kill a man because he didn't raise his hands fast enough. Now, I understand where counsel is coming from about we don't know what he's got a gun. I got a pretty good hand, and I can't hide a gun in my hand. That's pretty hard to do, okay? But Officer Garcia, I think, is the key to this. He's right there on the windshield, I think, as close as his microphone, because there's no front of the car, it's smashed. And he's seen everything. banging on the windshield. Where's the fear if he's banging on the windshield? He's seeing what he's doing. He's reaching, but there's no gun. He's reaching. He could have shot, but he didn't. Salazar does, opens up, and he pulls back, and then he shoots. And that's when you see the slow motion video where Salinas gets up and puts his hands up. Got the bullet holes on the funeral.
What's your best case that this violates clearly established law?
When they pinned him in the car, he was seized, and the Fourth Amendment kicks in. What was the underlying factors of why they stopped him?
I'm actually asking, what case would you cite to us that's your best case that this violates clearly established law?
Aguirre versus the City of San Antonio.
Okay, that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Where they said he's not resisting, and he's not a threat, and there's no criminal activity. I haven't seen any in the pleadings. There cannot be qualified immunity. Thank you.
Thank you. We have your argument. We appreciate both arguments in this case.
Oh, Your Honor, if I may say just one thing.
Oh, you have some? You still have more
there
time.
Is a case of Barnes versus Felix, and I have advised counsel about it, that is pending from this court on a qualified immunity, and the Supreme Court has.
We're aware of that case.
I just wanted to bring that the question of qualified immunity is still being considered. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next case for today is 2020.